It's time to wake up with Bill Finch. 203-333-9422. Only on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Wake up. This is your radio home for truth, justice, and democracy. It's your radio home if you're tired of being divided and manipulated. Tired of the right-wing screamers and whiners of talk radio. Tired of the science deniers, billionaires, bullies, and climate deniers. And tired of those who won't fight for you. Tired of those who openly defy our laws and our sacred constitution. And tired of the 1% having most of the money and certainly the biggest weddings. If you're tired about everything that's going on in the United States of America, but you want to do something about it, Wake Up will help strengthen you for the battles ahead. 1 hour every Sunday. Connoisseur Media allows me this hour to bring to you the guest who listen faithfully every Sunday to provide not only the information you need, but a patriotic, full-throated endorsement of the pillars of American democracy now under attack and red meat for the ideals that built this great nation. To preserve our freedoms, we must never be too tired to resist, right? So today, I want to bring you voices that will strengthen and rejuvenate you for the struggles ahead. Our guests today are fighting to preserve women's freedom. And we know that women's freedoms are under attack. They've been attacked in this country for hundreds of years, but we've made progress, and now we're turning back the clock on women's reproductive rights and their freedom to self-determination. Today, I'm joined by Taylor St. Germain, Deputy Director of Reproductive Equity Now, and Liz Gustafson, the Connecticut State Director, who I see plying the halls of the Capitol and twisting the arms of men and women legislators who need to listen more to the concerns of women and the concerns for their reproductive freedom. Welcome, everyone. Good morning, Liz.
Thanks so much for having us, Bill. I believe Liz just got disconnected, but she is calling back in immediately.
Oh, this is Taylor.
We're so excited to be with you this morning.
Well, I am too, and you know, I know we have we've outlined what we want to talk about, you know, one of the things that I got to try to get our producer's attention to get Liz back on. There she goes. One of the things that has happened since we spoken a few days ago is I started reading the book club for Troublesome Women. And just to orient you, you probably haven't listened to this show before, but every other week we have a woman from the Orange Book Banned Book Club. And what we try to do is we try to talk about books that are banned and why they're banned. I'm sure this one will be banned at some point when the Christian nationalist extremists get around to reading it. But the book club for Troublesome Women is fascinating to me because it's the women's generation that's discussed in this book is the women's generation that raised me. And I read this book and I realize how much angst the women of the 50s, 60s, and 70s were under, because there's one passage in the book that just really gets to me. And in their book club, interestingly enough, they have a book club, we have a book club. One woman was a nurse in World War II, and she felt helpless, and she felt like she was under the thumb of men and being told what to do and having no rights, and pumping out babies was her only responsibility. And one of the women poignantly said to her, "Doesn't it frustrate you?" And this was a book club talking about Betty Friedan's Feminine Mystique. "Doesn't it frustrate you that you went off and fought a war for freedom, but it was really only freedom for men and not for you? You're enslaved here in your kitchen, just having babies and not having a life." And now I realize reading books like this makes this person, this one man anyway, much more sensitive to what my mom was going through and other women around her, and much more angry about what's happening today. Tell me a little bit, Taylor, about why you're in this struggle and where you, how you came to be in this struggle.
Hi, Bill. This is Liz.
Oh, hey, Liz.
Hey, Bill. Good morning. It looks like Taylor is trying to join back on. Apologies for the tech issues.
Well, let's start with you, Liz. Tell me a little bit about your story. I started reading your dad's book, by the way. It was very intriguing. Let me know a little bit about, let the listeners know a little bit about you and how you became so involved in this struggle to protect women's freedoms.
So I am currently the Connecticut State Director with Reproductive Equity Now, but I've been doing this work for a long time. I actually started as a volunteer clinic escort with Hartford GYN Center, and then in 2018 was hired as an organizer and volunteer coordinator, and then became executive director of Pro-Choice Connecticut. In 2023, when Pro-Choice Connecticut sunset its operations, I joined the team at Reproductive Equity Now to carry the mantle forward and continue the fight for abortion access and reproductive freedom in Connecticut and beyond. I'm also
You've been at this a long, long time.
Yes.
Despite your young age.
Yes. And also, I am a proud abortion storyteller. Actually, in 2018, 3 months into my official career, my birth control did fail, and I needed to access abortion care myself here in Connecticut. I had a medication abortion, and I say I'm a proud abortion storyteller because abortion storytelling really is community care. And I am proud to continue doing that and continuing this work here in the Nutmeg State and the New England region with Reproductive Equity Now. And you know, I think Taylor is back, too. So
Taylor, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to learn about Taylor St. Germain and her struggle, her story, how she got here. We'll be right back after these messages.
Join the conversation, 203-333-9422. Back to Wake Up with Bill Finch. Live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, my guests today are the amazing team of Liv Gustafson from the Connecticut State Director of Reproductive Equity Now and Taylor St. Germain, the Deputy Director of Reproductive Equity Now. Taylor, we were just getting to learn a little bit about you. Tell us your story and how did you come to this struggle in this fight for women's freedom?
Yeah, thanks so much, Bill. You know, I joined the Reproductive Equity Now team just about a month before the Dobbs decision fell.
Remind everybody what the Dobbs decision is.
Absolutely. The Dobbs decision was a Supreme Court case that overturned Roe versus Wade. And Roe versus Wade protected the constitutional right to abortion access in the United States. And when Dobbs came down in May/June, there was a leak a couple months earlier, in 2022, the Supreme Court essentially revoked the constitutional protection to abortion care and handed the decision about whether care would be protected down to the states. And so, you know, it was a devastating, devastating decision that has had profound impacts on millions and millions of women across the country. You know, we've seen maternal mortality rates increase. We've seen doctors forced to be lawyers. But, you know, it's what made this work for me all the more important. And Reproductive Equity Now, which is the organization that both Liz and I work for, is really the leading, you know, reproductive health advocacy organization across New England. We work across Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New Hampshire to build a regional block for abortion access and ensure equitable access to the full spectrum of reproductive health care for every person. So that includes access to abortion. It also includes access to affordable child care and birth control access and assisted reproductive technologies and everything that kind of starts your reproductive health care life cycle. And we're really grounded in the belief that everybody should be able to have the freedom, the autonomy, and the dignity to make choices about their own bodies, lives, and futures.
Well, very well said. And I just know that we're under attack in so many areas. I mean, I know your organization is devoutly nonpartisan and bipartisan, but we can't ignore the fact that we have an administration in the White House that has said through its Project 2025 and other communications that it wants to roll back the clock to a time when America was great. Now, the implication there is that women were barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen taking care of their man and their children and basically enslaved. And for many people, my mom was one. She loved taking care of the home. She was a wonderful, loving mother, and she spent a lot of time with us that she was able to do because you know, she was home. And so there's no knock on that for people who want that. But I think what people are missing is when we say women have to have reproductive freedom, it's not a knock against the traditional family. Most of us were probably wonderful products, well-adjusted, psychologically balanced most of the time, I am anyway, unless I do the show here and I get a little revved up. But, you know, we were the product of some nice homes and some upbringing, but we can't ignore the fact that that the agenda here is to roll back the clock on voting rights so that minorities can't vote as often because they tend to vote against the interest of the elites. It's to give the power to the elites, to the executive branch. We saw that with the Supreme Court today, Thursday. And now we've got several cases that are really, really why people need to donate to places like reproductive rights now, because the Supreme Court has just issued two cases that I need you to explain to the listeners. I know that you're pretty worried about the effect of Dobbs nationwide, and we have women who have ectopic pregnancies. We have women who are miscarrying that need care, and doctors cannot treat them. In some cases, there are gruesome results, and the government turns a cold shoulder to those women and their suffering because they can't allow any exceptions to once there is conception, there will be a birth. And that's the Christian nationalist point of view. And they want our country to be a Christian nationalist nation. So there's a lot going on. But tell us about Scrimeti, if you would, Liz. And then maybe, Taylor, you could tell us about Medina or switch them around if you want. But one of you each take a case and let our listeners know how women in their lives will be affected by these cases.
So in the Scrimeti decision, which is a decision that upheld a Tennessee law banning gender-affirming medical care for transgender youth, this decision is a part of a broader rollback of bodily autonomy. Dobbs opened the door for politicians to expand attacks on our most fundamental rights to decide if, when, and how we get care. The same playbook is now being used to deny gender-affirming care. And by upholding Tennessee's ban, the Supreme Court is allowing lawmakers to interfere in deeply personal medical decisions. This ban targets transgender youth specifically, and gender-affirming medical care is not banned for cisgender youth in Tennessee, proving that this is not about safety or medical standards, but about denying care based on identity. It also criminalizes life-affirming care. Trans youth deserve compassion, support, and the freedom to make decisions about their own bodies with their families and medical providers, not fear and not stigma from politicians. And it does set a dangerous precedent. If politicians can ban essential health care for one group, they can target anyone's right to access the care they need, whether that is abortion, contraception, or gender-affirming care. And reproductive equity now stands with trans youth and their families. This fight is about every person's right to bodily autonomy, self-determination, and the freedom to live as themselves.
Well, I'm going to vote for Liz Gustafson if she ever runs for any office, because that was so perfectly well said. You know, we created a country where you look at a jury trial, and you have a trial by your peers, and the government has to put on a case that is beyond all reasonable doubts before they abridge your freedoms, before they abridge your liberties. The government is subservient to the people. Maybe that's the last place that's ever going to exist, is with a trial by jury. And it seems to me that people on the just don't understand that. You know, I've had the chance to teach civics to some of our International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers apprentices, and many of them, after the class is over, say, we never learned anything about the pillars of democracy. So it seems to me that the fight for bodily autonomy, Liz, really strikes at the heart of patriarchy. Men who have toxic masculinity are afraid of a fellow member of their tribe abandoning it to be feminine. And they're also equally upset about a person who was born as a female who identifies as a male, and they don't want those people in their tent because there is a very small-minded way that toxic masculinity invades the society. And I I've seen it in my own life. I have a family member who is a member of the trans community. I wholeheartedly support them. And if there's anybody out there listening, let's do a show on trans rights, because what the Christian nationalists and the Trump administration has done is they've found a small minority, the weakest minority in the country, and they've bullied them and they've targeted them and they've lied about them and they've misinformed the public. And it really is a bigger issue, Liz. You're so brilliant. You pointed out this is about an individual American, not the King of England, not the King of the United States. It's about an individual American being able to stand up and say, this is who I am. Screw the government. This is who I am. Right? Thank you, Liz. That was brilliant. Can you tell us a little bit about Medina Taylor?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Supreme Court ruled this week in a decision called Medina versus Planned Parenthood. And basically, in this decision, the Supreme Court upheld a South Carolina law, which basically bars Planned Parenthood from the Medicaid program and now permits states to refuse to cover care provided at Planned Parenthood clinics under state Medicare program or Medicaid programs. The decision in Medina versus Planned Parenthood is the latest in a long line of efforts to defund and dismantle trusted reproductive health care providers. And we know that this is not just about abortion, and it never has been, but anti-abortion extremists are really using every tool available to strip low-income Americans of their freedom to choose where and how they access their health care. So it won't only strip people in South Carolina of access to critical preventative services like cancer screenings or STD testing or low or no cost birth control, but it also sets a really dangerous precedent for politicians to dictate the kind of care that patients can receive, who gets that care, and where a patient can go for it. It's really about control, not care. And we see that, you know, as you said, these attacks are rooted in a broader agenda to really control bodies and restrict autonomy, especially for low-income people, people of color, women, and other marginalized communities.
Yeah, it is part of a comprehensive plan, isn't it? And you know, it's not like the right to control poor people's rights to vote and minorities' rights to vote is anything. It's not a step removed from trying to control poor people's access to health care. I know we'll get into Planned Parenthood in the second half of the show because I know you work very closely with them. But let's just remind the listeners, the percentage of cases, the percentage of units of service that Planned Parenthood gives is 3% of the units of service they provide. The times they see people, the times they help people are for abortions. Now, many of the people that seek an abortion the figure that the white Christian nationalist groups give out is 97% of the people who go to Planned Parenthood seek an abortion. No, 3% of the units of care are for abortion services, and about 97% of those people who seek abortion services have a completed abortion, at either telemed or in a doctor's office. So we have to keep the statistics straight here. By eliminating money from Planned Parenthood, those 97% of other services for poor people, middle-income people who can't afford the health care system, those people will not be able to access that in the states, generally red states. And I think at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have to go to news, but I'd like to come back. You have been very successful in most of the Northeast states in preserving women's freedom and their bodily autonomy, and I want to thank you for including the issue with transgender care, because it's very important and they don't have as many allies as women's groups do. So it's been an amazing transformative effort that you've undertaken. But we'll come back after the news and talk about why Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New York, New Jersey are a safe haven for women who seek freedom in the United States of America that's now being taken from them. We'll be right back after the news.
Talking about what matters to you this morning. Wake up with Bill Finch. WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome to the second half of your weekly infusion of truth, justice, and democracy. You won't get this on a lot of other shows. There's a lot of whining and hand-wringing about making America great again. We want to keep America evolving to the future in that pursuit of happiness, that elusive goal that we have dedicated this great democracy to. I want to just give a shout out to Paul. Paul always delivers fresh fish and vegetables to a couple of my neighbors. Paul, if you're listening, I know you're a loyal listener. Thank you. Beep the horn the next time you drive by. And Mike Petralia, happy birthday, Mike. I'm not going to ask you what one it is because I know you're getting up there, but you're looking darn good for your age. As we go back to the second half of the show, we left the first half and we were talking about all the terrible things going on around the United States, attacking women's freedom, attacking people's bodily autonomy, really a reversion back to authoritarian rule that we had worked for hundreds of years to escape, fought world wars over authoritarianism. Now we're going back to that at the hands of our own government. It's pretty sad. It's pretty depressing. A lot of us walk around bumping into walls because we're so depressed about what's happening to our country. But a couple weeks ago, June 14th, we saw 5 million people or so turn out to the streets. I was at the rally in Trumbull. Hats off to Ashley Gordiano and the Trumbull Democrats and all the people, Democrats and Republicans, that joined the 1,000 people strong display in Trumbull, about 1,200 in Bridgeport. Steve Stafford was there, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, many others. This is a call to action, including a call to protect women's freedom. So we talked to Liz and Taylor the first half of the show about what's going on nationally. And now we're going to hear from them about why they've been successful in the Northeast. But yet there are still challenges here. So, Taylor, why don't you have sort of a bigger regional perspective than I do, for sure. Tell us what's the state of women's freedom nationally and how the Northeast is different, how other states are different, and how these islands of freedom can help women.
Absolutely. So as we discussed earlier, since the Dobbs decision when Roe versus Wade was overturned, 21 states have banned or restricted abortion care nationwide. Here in New England, abortion remains protected, and that is key. Patients can still access abortion care, and if anyone needs access to care, they can visit our website, reproequitynow.org, and find our New England Abortion Care Guide, which will direct folks to the nearest abortion provider and offer all sorts of information on how to access that care. But despite 21 states banning or restricting abortion care, there is a glimmer of good news, and that is that since...
Glimmer away, please. We need it.
We need some good news these days. The annual number of abortions in the U.S. has actually gone up. It has risen to over 1 million, which is the highest number in over a decade. And that's according to new data from a group called WeCount. And that's because, really, of the scrappy ingenuity of our movement, and especially the leadership and bold action and innovation of New England states and other protected states across our country who are working to not only protect and expand access to care here at home, but also ensure that patients from banned or restricted states are able to access the care they want and need.
Taylor, can I just interrupt you for 1 second and just remind our listeners that no one is forcing women to have abortions. No one is forcing trans people to seek care. No one is forcing anything on anyone. These are Americans who are asserting their rights and their rights to freedom. Just remind the listeners of that once in a while.
Absolutely. This is a personal decision that is made between patients and their doctor. There is no forcing. That is our goal. We want to ensure that people have the ability to decide what is best for them when it comes to their healthcare decisions. And that is kind of our goal here in New England. So here in Connecticut, care remains protected. In Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Maine, Vermont, care remains protected. And what we're doing at Reproductive Equity Now is really focused on state-level advocacy to build a regional block for abortion access. We have seen an increase in patients coming to our region for care since the Dobbs decision in 2022, and that number continues to go up every single year. But we also are seeing patients obtain care from our region via telehealth, which, if folks aren't familiar, is your ability to hop on a computer and have a Zoom or a chat conversation with a doctor and be able to access the care that they need from their homes. And so Massachusetts has passed what we call a telehealth shield law. And this shield law allows patients to be able to access care from Massachusetts providers And it protects providers for offering that care regardless of the patient's location. And so Connecticut was actually the first in the nation, first state in the nation to pass a shield law when the Dobbs decision fell, which protected patients and providers who traveled to Connecticut for care. And that's been absolutely critical as we've seen, you know, patients come in waves to the Northeast since the Dobbs decision. And now we're looking to push farther to expand those telehealth protections as well so that we can, you know, kind of continue this regional push to ensure that patients both here in New England and in Vander restricted states are able to access care from our really brave providers.
So let me ask you a question, and then we're going to get to Liz to talk about the scene in Connecticut, which just is a bright light on the horizon to live in New England and care about. I guess, you know, we started the revolution against oppression and autocracy and a king. It's fitting that we are remaining one of the bastions of protecting all people's freedoms. But if a woman from Texas comes to Connecticut for care and returns home, will she be subject to arrest, or will her doctor who referred her to Connecticut be put in jail? It sounds like that's what's sort of happening.
You know, our shield law does what the state is able to do to the fullest extent to protect the providers who are offering the care. Unfortunately, you know, there's still more work we have to do to be able to protect patients who return home to a banned or restricted state, but it puts as many safeguards in place as we possibly can to protect their privacy, to protect the providers who are offering that care, and to make sure that, you know, in this really hostile federal landscape, we're able to ensure that patients can you know, to our fullest extent, be protected as they access the care that they want and need. But there is the threat, you know, of hostile out-of-state litigators, you know, in Texas or Louisiana, who are already coming for providers in New York, you know, who are offering care via telehealth to patients in banned states. And we do see patients be criminalized for accessing basic health care. We're seeing patients be criminalized for, you know, having miscarriages. And so there is a ton of work we have to do in red, purple, and blue states to ensure that we are protecting patients, protecting access to care, and protecting the providers who want to be doing, you know, the care to the best medical standard to provide for their patients, too.
So we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to hear from Liz Gustafson, who walks the floors of the Capitol. They're very hard floors. You have to wear comfortable shoes. And she plies the halls to make sure people, she strong-arms people in her own way, very convincingly, to make sure that Connecticut remains free. And we know that there are states, red states primarily, that are criminalizing women who choose their reproductive freedom, criminalizing the doctors. I'd like to have you both sort of jot down, while we're on this break, a couple of websites that our listeners can check out to monitor the situation and to share this information with others. Because I think what we saw on the 14th of June was that when we band together, we can get attention to these issues and slow them down. We want everybody to talk about, is it right to throw a woman in jail who sought reproductive care? Is it right to throw a doctor in jail for giving his best Hippocratic Oath-inspired care? So we're going to go to the news at some ads now, and then we'll be back with Liz to talk about the great state of Connecticut.
Wake Up with Bill Finch is live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut. Speak your mind, 203-333-9422.
Welcome back to Wake Up, and I tell people all the time, you know, that what was it like to be mayor? What was it like to be senator? Well, it was an amazing privilege. You get to help people every day. But the kids will always ask me, well, why do we have a representative democracy? I said, well, can you fit everybody in Connecticut in the Capitol? No, you can't. So that's sort of a simplistic way to look at representative democracy. But the oil that helps representative democracy work are the non-governmental agencies, the advocacy agencies, the special interest groups that all have something important to say for their interests, and they go to the Capitol represented by lobbyists. I happen to lobby for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and the National Electrical Contractors Association to make sure that the best electricians in the world are hired as often as possible. But there are many people up there, some representing the white hats, sometimes not. But one of the white hats up there in the Capitol that everybody admires is Liz Gustafson. And Liz, I know that you've worked so hard to maintain women's freedom and bodily autonomy in Connecticut. Tell us about this last General Assembly session. Tell us what you're looking forward in the future.
Thanks so much, Bill.
People donate to reproductive rights now, they're helping to pay for people like Liz to go there and advocate for them. So go ahead, Liz. Tell them what you do.
What I do is advocate alongside providers, patients, and other folks on behalf of sexual and reproductive health care and protecting and expanding access to that. Because what is certain and has always been constant is that people have and will always need access to abortion, pregnancy-related care, and the full spectrum of sexual and reproductive health care. And our state has a long history of leading these efforts to protect and expand access. And so in this current moment now and in the future, we not only have the opportunity, but most importantly, the responsibility to meet this moment as a state and as a region. And so this past legislative session, we are proud of a couple of wins, significant wins that we did have. We had a law now in effect to explicitly affirm the right of young people to confidentially access and consent to contraceptive and pregnancy-related care, and this closed a significant statutory gap. We are also proud that Connecticut was the first state to pass the SHIELD law, and this past legislative session, we strengthened it again this year, and we're fighting to do more. We also are incredibly proud of our partnership with the Treasurer's Office here in the state of Connecticut and the ongoing efforts to implement the Safe Harbor account for folks seeking gender-affirming and abortion care here in the state of Connecticut that will provide funding for practical support needs. So that are things like travel, lodging, childcare, et cetera, any of those collateral costs. Also, this past legislative session, Connecticut strengthened its own state statute regarding access to emergency medical care, clarifying that in cases where there is a serious risk to a patient's life or health, emergency medical care to stabilize a patient includes the reproductive health care services that are legal in the state, which would include abortion. And this includes necessary care related to miscarriage management and treatment for ectopic pregnancies, among other conditions. I also will uplift an important resource that we established in strong partnership with the Attorney General's Office, which is the Reproductive Equity Now Foundation's Abortion Legal Hotline, which is a free and confidential abortion information resource built in collaboration with the AG's office, nonprofit partners, and law firms here in the state of Connecticut. And this is a free and confidential resource that is available for providers, patients, and helpers.
Can you give us the number, Liz?
Yes, it is 833-309-6301. And folks can also access the hotline via secure form on our website as well.
So if I were calling that line and wanted information about abortion, did they tell me that I should have an abortion? Is it objective?
It is a legal hotline. So if people have questions regarding their right to access, obtain, or help someone seek care, that's what that resource is for.
Okay. It's just stay out of jail. In this move toward autocracy in the United States, we've got to manage a legal minefield, don't we?
Yes. But I will say, too, that especially providers are incredibly resilient and shouldn't have to also be lawyers at the same time. Providers continue to stay and be committed to ensuring their patients, regardless of who they are, where they are from, or any circumstance, can access the essential care they need. And so our role as advocates is to advocate on behalf of providers and patients, and is also why we are incredibly proud to offer this free pro bono legal hotline for them as well.
Well, it's amazing how crafty your movement has become, and you in particular, and Taylor. normally we go headlong into trying to get bills passed, but you have worked with the Treasurer's Office and the Attorney General's Office. So Treasurer Eric Russell has set up a fund to do what?
So that fund is in the process of being set up, but that fund will provide funding, practical support funding for folks who are seeking and need additional financial support for abortion care here in the state of Connecticut or gender-affirming care as well. And that's funding that is not for the care itself, but for all of the other costs that might come with travel or just needing to navigate the healthcare system to get that care that they need.
Have you guys given any thought to, like, Trump 3.0? Like, right now, he's attacked law firms and universities and media outlets that have offered alternative opinions to his own. We've never seen this from the United States president before. This is new territory for all of us. But he's looking to punish those who do things that they're constitutionally allowed to do, but that are running different than his little mind tolerates. So are you worried about what the president's going to do with holding other funds to states that do protect women's freedom?
That's a great question. The thing is Donald Trump put his playbook in writing, and it's called Project 2025. We know their playbook. We know what's coming. And what we have to do is continue to inform our response at the state level from this playbook. We know that, you know, Connecticut has a long history of leading efforts to protect patients, to protect providers, to protect that funding for reproductive health care. And we know that, you know, the state is going to continue to stand up against the Trump administration and ensure, you know, we continue to provide the care that is necessary for patients. You know, what I will say is that the anti-abortion movement and Donald Trump's goal right now is chaos and confusion. And so what we
have achieved that, haven't they?
Right, absolutely. And so we have to continue to push back, you know, with accurate, legitimate, and up-to-date information to ensure that patients, to ensure that the state leaders, to ensure that providers are able to continue doing their jobs to protect our communities. And so that's why Reproductive Equity Now has put together that abortion legal hotline with the Attorney General's office. It's why we have a New England Abortion Care Guide, which is available on our website to direct patients to access to reproductive health care.
And that website is reproequitynow.org, reproequitynow.org. Please visit that site. This is where you can get the most up-to-date information. Right, Taylor?
Absolutely. Yep. We're constantly updating that with information on where our bills are at, information on how to access care. We do a ton of education work about anti-abortion centers, which are sometimes known as crisis pregnancy centers, too, which outnumber legitimate abortion clinics across New England by more than 3-1. These facilities are facilities that purport to offer the full spectrum of reproductive health care, but when patients often go into them, they're often met with disinformation and dissuasion from abortion access. And so we want to make sure that patients are able to access the real care that they need from legitimate abortion providers who are doing this really brave work amidst a really hostile federal landscape and a federal administration that is hell-bent on restricting our access to rights. But we're going to keep going because that's what we do here in Connecticut. That's what we do here in New England. And that's what we do at Reproductive Equity Now.
Liz, you know, I had an epiphany probably 20 or 30 years ago when I was asked to help escort women into the Summit Women's Center in downtown Bridgeport. I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. And I went there and I put the vest on and I had the little training session ahead of time. And all we were doing was trying to allow women safe passage without being accosted by really far right-wing extremists that believed they were fighting for God. And I have never been so presumptuous to know what God wants me to do. I try to be a good person, so I tried to help these women just go see their doctor. Some were going for abortion care, some were going for a pap smear, some were going for whatever they were going into the Summit Women's Center for. And to see the fear in these women's faces when accosted by people supposedly working for God, was one of the most transformative experiences of my political life. And it made me realize how brainwashed so many of the people in the MAGA world are. This is what evolved over the last 20 years, totally brainwashed into thinking that everything should be suspended for the world to be their way. I just want to say that to the extent that truth, freedom, and intelligence will win the day, you too will win. You too will win the day, and women's rights will be preserved because you are on the side of freedom. You're on the side of truth and justice, and it's been my privilege to have you on the show. I'd like to give you the last minute or so to make any concluding comments you'd like to make.
I will just say one of my favorite quotes I continuously remind folks of from Renee Bracy Sherman is that everyone knows someone who's had an abortion. Everyone loves someone who's had an abortion. Abortion is healthcare and abortion is freedom. And this moment really demands that we all get informed and stay vigilant and also know of the resources and tools that are available so we all have them in our toolbox so we can care for one another in this moment now and in the future. So I just wanted to thank you again for having us on and letting us share a bit more about our resources like the hotline and the care guide, and also talk a bit more too about anti-abortion centers and the dangers that they pose to public health.
Thank you for being on the show. It's been wonderful, and we'll leave with some you too.